Today's guest is Ron Schwartz, change agent, trusted advisor, and organizational designer and founder of Brass Tacks, a boutique consultancy that specializes in organizational transformation. Ron Schwartz, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you again.
Yes, likewise.
So I know we've been talking about alignment. Mm-hmm. Alignment with what?
Yeah, so it's the first question that we get asked in what we do. A lot of times clients will say, oh, I want to be more aligned. Well, what are you aligning to?
Yeah.
The way we frame it is essentially around five key questions. Why do you exist, or what's your contribution? What are you going to be best at or known for? And you can use whatever words you want, by the way, to describe these: mission, vision, intent. Mm. But really it's about the question that you're answering, not so much the word that you're using to describe it. So you've got the why do we exist? What are we going to be best at? What does success look like for us? What's that endpoint that we're working to? What are the things that we need to do now to get there? And then how are we going to behave while we do all of that? If you've got the answer to those five key questions, then that's what it is that we work to align organizations to.
To those key questions.
Yeah.
What are your influences that have helped you come up with those questions? Because I'm hearing a bit of hedgehog in there, Jim Collins.
Yep, there's
Pat Lencioni.
Yes, there's Lencioni, there's Jim Collins. Even going back to McClelland and McGregor, you know, understanding the affiliation, achievement, you know, those sort of things. But ultimately it really, I mean, I'm just trying to think. There's a guy named Peter Compo who's done some recent work on emerging strategy or emergent strategy, which is it's less about having it set and forget, and it's almost like an agile strategy approach. That's particularly influenced what we've been doing. And even some of the organizational design work done by, just trying to remember his name now, but he publishes Beta Codex. And it's just fantastic work on this idea of new structures for organizations, whether they be strategic or whether they actually be organizing people.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. There's so much there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll park agile strategy for a moment. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this, new structures for organizations, because organizing your resources and organizing your people, well, that's the first step of any strategy consideration and implementation.
Yeah. A lot of the people we talk to and talk about often look at organizing people in terms of boxes and lines. The boxes and lines are just a visual manifestation of it. And more often than not, people work outside of the boxes and lines to get things done. So it's we talk about from three perspectives: role clarity, goal clarity, and decision right. So get the roles designed, give them goals, and then make sure that the people have the decision rights to execute against that. Because that's actually where the biggest conflict comes from, more often than not, is the misalignment of decision rights.
Yes.
But as you're designing, don't design from what makes the company work. Design from the perspective of how the customer interacts with the company.
Okay, talk more about that.
So we've got one client over in the US. They're a multimedia type group. They engage with their clients through all different forms of media. They also have physical retail product. Yet they had organized their organization very much around the way IP flowed inside the organization rather than the way the customer buys the IP. So it was actually bringing the organizations, it was letting the customer see the way the organization works, the internal machinations. They don't care.
No.
They just want to engage with the brand, with the product.
Yes.
So find the best way for them to engage with it, where you create value at that outside nexus, and then design from the outside in. That's the way, you know, that's particularly where Peter Compo and some of the others are actually moving in this idea of organizing from the outside in to meet your strategic need.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is that a big business organizational design kind of thing? Is this relevant for a mid-size or small business?
We find it's relevant for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
We've worked with organisations as small as 6 people, as big as 110,000.
Right.
And the same basic ideas work. They just have different levels of complexity.
I guess for a mid-sized business, there's the flexibility to be able to step back and say, we've got all these people.
Mm.
What are our goals?
Yep.
So what did you say? You said goals, decision rights, and the first one was?
Roles.
Roles.
Yeah.
Roles, goals, decision rights.
Yeah.
The decision rights thing is such a block in organisations,
yep,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And it can come from capability as well as culture.
Yes. Yeah. And it's sometimes just eccentricities.
Yeah.
Particularly when you've got small family businesses.
Yeah.
When you've got founder-led businesses that have grown and matured, yet the founder is still involved as though they were involved way back when it was this thing with just a founder and a co-founder maybe.
Yeah.
We had one client that was cycling through CMOs.
Mm-hmm.
The CMO's role was very clear.
Mm.
You know, they were there to own the brand. They were there to execute, bring basically the top of the funnel.
Yeah.
They had very clear goals around brand awareness, you know, total number of leads, things like that. Yet every time they tried to do something to enhance the brand, the founder would step in and say, no, it's not the brand I created 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And so CMOs were leaving because they had no control over the things that they were being both held accountable for, yet they wanted to achieve as well. It's not just that they were being held accountable, they wanted to achieve it.
Mm.
So they were leaving. They cycled through 3 CMOs in about 18 months.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would have been quite easy for you to come in from the outside and see what was happening.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so back to the idea then of outside in organisation.
Yeah.
Talk to me then about the fundamental questions you were mentioning that lead to alignment. Where are organisations falling short in having answers to those questions? And again, particularly mid-sized businesses.
Yeah, it's not so much that they're falling short on the answers to the questions. Where they're falling short is executing against their answers.
Right.
So that's the alignment piece. They quite often have the answers, but then as they start going through day-to-day execution, they lose sight of those answers.
Can you give an example of what that looks like?
So research that we did recently showed that measurement, organisational measurement, not the goals, the goals are about the people, organisational measurement is an opportunity in many organisations. It's things like having a scorecard. But the problem is that the scorecard doesn't, or at least the research shows, that the scorecard doesn't always have only what's necessary.
Right.
People start adding things to it slowly. And before you know it, your scorecard is measuring things that just aren't relevant anymore.
Yeah.
And therefore, you lose this tool to align your organization because you can't use it as a very, you know, as a laser-like tool, say, here are the 5 things that are most important. So you get this, I remember reading a story about shopping trolleys when I was in high school and about how you drop a shopping trolley somewhere and before you know it, a week later, there'll be 10 shopping trolleys there.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. You drop a scorecard in some organisations, they see it as an opportunity to start adding more objectives, more metrics, but then it loses its point. It loses its value.
Well, there's whole industries around scorecards.
Yep.
Within organisations, no matter what the size of the organisation is. It might sit with one ops person or it might be a whole team.
Yeah. They create cottage industries inside, which is ineffective. And none of us as leaders have, you know, resources to spare.
Mm.
And wasted resource in today's world, like, you know, lazy assets, lazy resources, it's fatal for most organisations.
More than ever.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So just get, you know, you keep saying such interesting things, Ron, and then I want to dig deeper in. So talk about wasted resources or lazy resources. What are some examples of that? Where could a leader see that in an organization?
So we talk about it from the perspective of being able to align individual roles. And when we say a role, we don't mean CEO. That's a job title.
Mm-hmm.
As a CEO, you may be a coach and mentor. You may be a salesperson. You may be a culture champion. There's lots of roles that you play. What we often see when we do a roles activity with a team is there are lots of people playing the same role.
Mm.
And they're actually trying to achieve the same thing without actually knowing that they do that. And so through some of the processes where you start visualizing the roles and you start mapping them out, leaders will often look at it and go, oh, I didn't realize that that's what people are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had one client that with a very simple change in the way he managed his calendar around those roles saved him, he said, he saved himself roughly 20 to 25% of his week.
Mm.
I mean, imagine what you could do with 20 to 25% of your week.
Mm.
Even if all you did was go home and relax, you'd be a much better executive. Funnily,
that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah. But 20 to 25% is not an insignificant amount of time in today's world.
So that's looking at roles across an organization or a group, starting with what you need to achieve.
Yeah.
And if you've got two people working on exactly the same thing, what a waste of an effort that is.
Yeah. So, I mean, we use a process. We find it a very fun process. I had a client who used it 9 quarters in a row.
Mm.
And he said every single time he learned something new about himself and his team, where you actually visualize your roles and the goals you have against them, and then you actually put it up as a gallery inside a meeting room. And everyone just walks around looking at each other's roles. And it was stunning to watch them go, I didn't realize that person was doing that as well.
Yeah. Right.
Or, hey, I'm doing that, they're doing that. That's actually a conflict. We're going to be wasting each other's time. And again, if you can find an hour a day, that's all it takes for an individual. Imagine that at an organizational level.
This has really landed. In fact, I have to go. I've got some roles. But just that idea, and it can happen with senior people in an organization, can't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Because you can double down. This is the most important thing. All hands on this thing. And that can be such duplication of effort.
Yeah. And we get so lax in our systems and processes, even something as simple as reflection. Stopping at the end of the week going, what went well, what didn't go so well? Have I actually contributed? And it's surprising how few people do that.
Yeah.
You know, we get so lost in the day to day. You know, we have a busy week. We go try and go home, get to the kids or get to our families, get to our friends, get to sport, whatever it is that we're doing. We just stop. We forget to stop and say, did I actually contribute what I needed to contribute this week? Where should I be contributing next week? And just those two simple questions can actually make us more effective.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have James Clear as a featured speaker for Vistage for our members coming up in August, which we're very excited about. And I think when you were talking about progress versus performance,
yep.
And, you know, James Clear talks so much about the difference between a target and your systems. And saying that old saying that you don't rise to the target, you fall to your systems.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that performance versus progress.
Yeah, so performance versus progress being able to draw that distinction is essential because you can actually be when you're designing a scorecard, when you mistake progress for performance, you can give yourself great results.
Yes. Yeah.
But is it actually making a difference?
Yeah.
You need to actually distinguish between the two but have both.
And that can be the trap, can't it, when you've got any strategy implementation.
Yeah.
You've got your rocks or what have you, and then if you put all the tasks that are going to be achieved and you have your one weekly check-in, yes, I've done that, I've had that meeting, I've designed that thing, that's progress, but that's not you've necessary. Always got to be stepping back then. How do you get that link between progress and performance?
Yeah, so if you think about it as a chain working backwards almost, this idea of what's the impact that we need to have?
Mm.
What are the outcomes that will create that impact? What are the outputs that will lead to that outcome? What are the activities that will generate the output?
The output.
And then what are the resources that are required to implement those activities? If you're focused on the outcome and impact as performance and the other side as progress, that's actually where you can draw the distinction. And it's actually, it makes it a lot easier to say, is this an output or is it an outcome? If it's an output, then let's put it towards progress. If it's an outcome, then let's put it towards performance. Then you have to craft a very careful metric around measuring that outcome. Whereas the performance side, you need to put milestones. You need to put task plans and project plans in place. That's how you measure your progress, and how you measure performance is using a scorecard with outcomes and metrics and targets.
So for businesses then, I'm hearing that start with your five questions. That's
absolutely
where you have to start. And then from there, what's the next step?
It'll be different for all organisations, but the way we approach it, there are four basic areas that you can play with. What's the story that you're telling around the answer to those five questions?
You do like a story.
Yes, I do love stories. Then what's the management system that you're implementing around it? And that's where your scorecard comes in, because the simplest management system in the world has really three components. What do you measure? What do you report on? And what do you meet about? And so once you've got that management system in place, then you can actually that's aligned. Then you bring your talent in, aligning your talent, and that's where you think about roles, goals, and decision rights. Then the last bit is the leadership and reinforcement. They're the four areas that we play with. And depending on the strength of the answers to the questions, you may not even need a narrative. It may just be a self-obvious narrative. You just need to tell people about the five questions and the answers. But where you need to then go is the management system. Or you may need to go to your people. What we find is in the medium size organization, it's usually the management system and the people organization that you go to. The narrative, the organization is small enough that the narrative is easier to tell.
Everyone knows it.
Yeah, and the leadership, the organization is small enough that a CEO can get their arms around everyone and really engage with them, or the leadership team could. So it becomes more about getting the clarity of the roles, goals, and decision rights, and then the management system that's going to keep you on track.
So have you seen some leaders in mid-sized businesses successfully adopt this and get up and running with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It does take time.
Yeah.
It's the word we use is intentionality. It's actually about bringing focus and discipline. So it means things like having your cadence of meetings in place, which then drives the cadence of reporting and also the cadence of capturing information, which are the three components of your management system. So having a weekly management meeting, then, you know, a monthly business review, a quarterly business review, an annual strategy review, things like that. Then you start aligning your talent. So having the discipline to stick with your weekly one-on-ones that focus on the role clarity and goal clarity and surface decision right conflicts, having a system in place to deal with those decision rights, particularly when there's a conflict. So those sort of things are small, but maintaining the discipline around them, that's where we've seen it most successfully executed. And I can think of a number of companies. There's one client I've got at the moment, probably a bit bigger than a medium-sized company, an American company. The CEO, when he did his roles and goals, had 11 roles. And he looked at it and he said, that's why I've been finding it too hard to get my work done. And he shed seven of those roles. So he had four roles plus two personal roles.
And how did he shed seven roles? Because someone has to do it.
Exactly.
Or not.
Well, he's got – so one of them was around finance. He's got a CFO. He's got to trust that person. He didn't need to sit in business unit finance meetings. He sat in the company finance meeting and he trusted his CFO and the CFO's team to actually do the work to hold people accountable at the departmental level, the business unit level. Mm. He didn't need to approve the colour of posters.
Yeah.
So he just, it was, again, it was a personal discipline thing for him.
Yes.
He was employee number one, by the way, in a 1,500 person organisation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He'd been there for everything. Yeah. So it was just easy. So it was actually about making himself uncomfortable and letting go.
And then I imagine there's two things that could have happened. If he had that approach of having 11 roles, other people in the organisation, I'm imagining that his leadership team would also have had that approach. Or he had 11 and the others had one. It could go either way, couldn't it?
What happened in that organisation was he had 11, his direct reports had 11 in the executive team, and then everyone else had one or two.
Yeah.
All the decisions flowed upward. But as the company was growing, that was actually creating a bottleneck. So that was a big challenge for that organisation, especially at the rate they were growing. They were staggering growth. You see it in stages of organisations, you know, because organisations are, someone I worked with used to say that organisations break in multiples of 3 and 10.
Right.
So now we're going back to this organisational design thing. When you talk about it in 3 and 10, you know, you've got a founder and a co-founder, most entrepreneurial stage, and you bring a third person in, the way those two people communicated doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
So the system breaks. Then you get to 10 people. At 10 people, it's too many for a single team now to be truly effective. So now you're going to have leaders and multiple teams. So the systems don't work anymore. Then you get to 30 and then 100. And each time you do that, it requires something new. And you get to a point where you reach an institutionalization, where you've got not very much freedom. But you need that moment to be able to create the freedom of growth. And so it's almost like we use the metaphor of a tennis ball bouncing, if you've seen it in slow motion.
Yeah.
It compresses right down. You need that compression, that pressure, that discomfort for it to bounce back. Organisations need that too. There will be a moment where it feels uncomfortable putting systems and processes in place, but you need to be able to put those systems and processes in place to create the space to bounce back and grow and create the freedoms that you previously had.
So the big takeaway for me here is the two areas probably in a mid-sized business of management systems and aligning your talent around roles, goals and decision rights. And that feels really good food for thought, actually. What else did your research show?
The research showed, so most organisations have a scorecard of sorts.
Yes.
It then showed, interestingly, this is where we were talking about the discipline with your scorecard, that those scorecards don't always have what's most important on them. But then the thing that we found staggering was that the research showed that organisations don't use those scorecards to then make decisions.
Yeah.
But I guess if it doesn't show what's important, then you won't use it to make decisions.
So you need to revisit it, don't you?
Yeah. It's a live document.
Every quarter.
Yeah, but it's not constantly adding more. If you add something, you need to perhaps take something off and then change your narrative to show why you've changed something on the scorecard. The other thing was that goal setting systems for individuals. There are goal setting systems. They aren't necessarily used consistently. And then the other bit was that they aren't reviewed, the goals, when they're in the system.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's rocket science that the data would show this, that the research would show it, but it is a good reminder that as leaders we need to step back and make sure if we do have a system that we use it and we actually go back and review goals. And we do it in a constructive way. It's not why aren't you getting there? And we all know that, you know, that's all that's going to do is create fear. But we actually do bring back those goals, let people know that we are focusing on their goals. As leaders, we're paying attention to them and that we're helping them achieve the goals. And then if those goals align with the organisational goals, which was the third part of the research around goals, which was that the cascade isn't necessarily there, the build-up.
That's common.
Yeah. You know, in an ideal world, if you added up all the goals of the individuals in the company, it would actually be more than what the company has committed to.
Yeah.
But the research showed that a lot of people don't think that. They think it actually doesn't line up in that way. So once you've got all those things in place, you've got what you need to ideally be successful in executing what you have in the five answers to those five questions.
So when you're talking, you were talking about a system for capturing and tracking goals. There's so many platforms and systems out there for this kind of thing. Is there one that fits with your approach and not necessarily knowing what the platform is, or do you think you can do this with whatever platform, whatever model you have?
We actually believe that you can do it with any model.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. There's some research that came out of MIT around a new acronym. You know, there's SMART and OKRs and all these other things. But they talk about FAST. F is frequently reviewed. Yeah. A is aspirational. S is specific, or you could replace that with SMART.
Yeah.
And then T is transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And if your goal setting system and your goals meet those four characteristics, you're more likely to actually create success. The frequent review makes sense. We've just talked about that. Aspirational, there should be some stretch to it. Obviously, it needs specificity.
Yeah.
The bit that we often fall down on
is transparency.
Yeah. Which is why that idea of the gallery walk that we spoke about earlier, it's the ultimate in transparency. It's not that we're putting here's our pay, and some organisations do that, but we're just sharing our goals, which builds trust. When we've got trust and people know what we're trying to achieve and why, we're more likely to be able to achieve it. Firstly, because we've now articulated it to someone, so there's an extra level of accountability, but also we're going to get more alignment with each other.
Which brings it back to behaviour and people.
Yeah.
So I think the research has been so interesting and so relevant for that whole mid-smaller business that's an area of such interest for me and for my community. I love what you're talking about with roles, goals and decision rights. I love what you're talking about, consistency, and I think that idea of progress versus performance is really compelling. I think that you've made the complex simple enough for a leader to be able to grasp and think about where to start and perhaps where to dig in and explore even further. Always interesting to speak with you, Ron. Thank you so much for your time, and lovely to have you joining us today.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for the opportunity.